There's a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. This is the Reconnect with Carmen LaBurge. I'm Birga Alden, filling in. Now, here on the show, we're putting God in his place, back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. Whatever the headline, whatever the debate, from foreign affairs to affairs of the heart, from politics to parenting, God has something to say about all of it. Yet, all too often, his people are standing on the sidelines of the discussion. We hope to change that, and we want to help you get God back into everyday conversation by challenging you to think about what you're thinking about, getting God's perspective on the news and issues of the day in order that you can be an ambassador of that perspective to others. We invite you to connect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com, like us on Facebook, and then let us know what you're thinking about on Twitter using the hashtag CarmenTalk. Today's show is about making a difference where you are, wherever God has planted you, or wherever you are right now, he wants to use you for his glory. In the second half of the program, we're going to be talking with a brand new author who is the mother of three, two of whom have special needs. But first, I want to ask you a question. Do you know how to help somebody in need? Is passing a few bucks out the car window really helpful? Well, maybe you want to invest into the life of a struggling single mom. Or perhaps there's a widow in your church and you want to help her, but you're just not sure how. Well, we're going to be talking about this issue in just a moment. I'm the former Daily Christian Radio show host and the executive director of Love, Inc. of Albuquerque. Love, Inc., which stands for Love in the Name of Christ, is a nationwide ministry that mobilizes local churches to transform lives and communities in the name of Christ. Here's how it works. Churches from various denominations in a community come together and form a local Love, Inc. organization. Working in collaboration with area agencies, the local Love, Inc. is able to mobilize the collective resources available through its network of congregations to offer real help and hope to needy families, children, and individuals in their community. Now, it was founded back in 1977, designed to bring churches together in the U.S., helping communities, the people in need right there in the midst of the communities, and responses can range from basic help with food and clothing to then surrounding individuals and families in need with holistic support through long-term caring relationships. Currently, there's over 137 Love, Inc. affiliates in 29 states, representing a network of nearly 8,000 churches. In 2015, affiliates received over 300,000 calls and met over 170,000 needs, and then went on to mobilize nearly 1.4 million volunteer hours. Every Love, Inc. affiliate is comprised of a network of churches and community agencies that are working together across those denominational lines, serving people in need all over our nation. Now, I wanted to bring in somebody who knows about Love, Inc. very, very well. A gentleman by the name of Kirk Vandermolen is my first guest today. He is the Director of Missional Integrity for Love, Inc., and for 10 years he served as a Love, Inc. Affiliate Executive Director in Michigan. He's been an associate pastor, a youth worker, a newspaper reporter, and on staff with a member of Congress. He's earned his bachelor's degree in business and communications from Hope College, a master's of divinity from Western Seminary, and a master's of social work from Grand Valley State University. He is currently pursuing his PhD at Western Michigan University with a research focus on the interaction of supportive relationships and faith with coping skills and problem solvings of people experiencing financial difficulty. Kirk lives in Michigan with his wife and four children. And Kirk, welcome to the Reconnect.
Hi, Birga. Very, very nice to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to talk to you. You have quite a mouthful in this degree that you're pursuing with your PhD. So I'm going to let you figure out how to get that on your next business card. But I'm super excited to talk to you. And then just to let this audience know more about Love, Inc., can you go back in time and take us to that place where you first heard about Love, Inc.? And let me know what caused you to want to get involved with this organization.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's been a while since I've thought about that, and thinking about it now, it just brings a smile to my face. As you noted, I went to seminary, and then I had a chance to be an associate pastor at a local church in my community, and really loved that, and did that for 6 years. after that, I had an opportunity to travel overseas and do some international ministry for a year. And then I came back to Michigan, and I was praying about what God would have me do in ministry. And he put a phrase in my heart, which was bridging the gap between churches and members of the community in need. I didn't know what that meant at that point in time. I didn't know anything about Love, Inc. I had experience in church work, had a seminary degree, and I kind of went for the default when sometimes you don't know what to do. You say, well, I'll go back to school. Well, I did that because I knew that I had one side of that equation of helping churches help families in need. So I thought, well, with that experience, what could I match up with that to serve better in this role? And that was to get a degree in social work. As social workers are primarily helping people on the fringe or helping people that have needs. Through that education, I was required to do an internship, and I picked an internship at a place called Love in the Name of Christ because of the faith-based focus of it, and it seemed to match exactly what God had put in my heart to do. And through that relationship and serving at that particular affiliate, it was so confirming to my life personally that my desire, my experience was being brought together in the right place. Not long after that, I ended up going back to the community in which I served as an associate pastor to begin with an affiliate that just started. A Love, Inc. affiliate in that community, and grew with that affiliate and experience and impact for about 11 years. And I just really loved being there. It was a great experience.
Hmm. I'm talking with Kirk Vandermolen. He is the Director of Missional Integrity for Love, Inc., which is Love in the Name of Christ. So, you know, having been involved in social work, having gotten a lot of education in that field, you are well aware of all the different aid organizations out there, and there's lots of different methods and, I guess, theologies behind helping people in need. So why the Love, Inc. model? What made that resonate with you?
Sure. Well, one of the primary things with the Love, Inc. model that resonated with me is its mobilization factor. I mean, in your intro to the program, you used the word ambassador, use the word of, people, or the phrases of people making a difference in the world right where they are in right at that time. And the Love, Inc. model really has that focus of mobilizing at least six churches from six different denominations in the geographic area. And many of our affiliates have many more churches than that. But just connecting a need with a resource in the community and to bring that together and to see the impact that that has on all people involved in it not only helps individuals, but it helps the community as a whole. And in terms of that aspect of faith, when God tells us our the commandments to love God and then also to love others, being a part of that for individual churches and people within the churches to help provide them opportunities to do that is very rewarding. And there's some other aspects of beyond the mobilization factor is Love, Inc. really has a focus on building relationships, approaching situations with an eye towards developmental compassion, meaning that there is a certain time and place for relief in responding materially to people. But our heart is not to stop there, but to draw people into relationship and see how we can mobilize churches to help people achieve their individual goals, beyond just mere survival, and to thrive and make a difference themselves in their communities where they are. Mm-hmm. Really exciting.
It is exciting, and I think a lot of believers, a lot of Christians, they know that we're supposed to be helping those that are in need, but the practical aspect of how to do that, I think, eludes a lot of people. And for me, I know part of my story about getting involved was just this ongoing prayer as I would see panhandlers at every intersection that I'd get to and praying, Lord, what do I do? Does passing the money out the window really help this person? You know, whether you're talking about a single mom, maybe you're talking about a widow, you're talking about somebody that you encounter out in the community, that they absolutely need help. There's no question about it. But how to do it in a honor or in a manner that honors Christ, but actually helps assist them to get out of the place where they're stuck. That's the part where I think a lot of Christians really need help in understanding what that practical measure of help looks like.
That's one of the ways in which Love Inc. wants to help, because it's not easy work. It's not easy getting beyond a relief and into relationships and meeting with people on a weekly level. And sometimes it can be scary for churches and people to figure out how to do that. Well, we kind of set the table. We represent and build relationships with people in need in the community and build relationships with churches in the community. And we try to make some introductions and try to handle some of the logistics that may be involved with that as a Love Inc. organization to allow something bigger than relief to happen. We use several phrases. One is, I like to say, we don't want to help people in poverty. We want to help people out of poverty. Mm-hmm. And our experience is that's more than a handout. That's a hand up, and that takes time. And it takes an investment of relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I would love for you to share some of the stories of success that you've seen over your years being involved with Love Inc. And by the way, just to let our listeners know, talking with Kirk Vandermolen, who is the Director of Missional Integrity for Love Inc. But Kirk, what are some of those stories that come to mind when I ask you about the successes that you've seen?
Sure. Well, you know, some of the stories that we can tell might not seem tremendously exciting, but when you're dealing with someone who is in crisis and in a particular time of need, just a very simple thing can make a huge difference in their life for that day and let them know that people care. So one of our affiliates, and I'm not sure if they had ever received a request for a lawnmower before, but they had three single women make individual requests for a lawnmower. They were in a place that they were willing and able to mow the lawn, but they didn't have access to a lawnmower. So Love Inc. just turns to how we do things. We turn to the church, and within 2 or 3 days, that particular affiliate was able to secure a donation of three different used lawnmowers that worked just fine and able to meet those needs. I don't know the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say, but our hope is that through that felt need, that people would look to Love Inc. more, would look to the churches more, and then be able to build relationships. So that's one about lawnmowers. Another neat thing that Love Inc. Is able to do is not only mobilize churches, but to use its connections within the community to get other entities involved. So we have another affiliate in Iowa who had a residential treatment facility, sort of a halfway house, and had people who had been ordered by the court to be there, and there was a need for the gentleman in the home to have a haircut. And so that center called Love Inc. and said, is there a way that, you know, you could mobilize some volunteers to do that? And sure enough, in not too long of a time, they had three or four different people who were professionals at, you know, cutting hair. They networked with a local church then that provided care packages of personal needs products. They're also, you know, partnered to, if you're going to cut hair, you need some stools to sit on. And so even a local business donated their bar stools for the day for all these people to get together. And so, you know, not your not your typical story of relief, and not a typical story of what you would think would be a need, but it made a difference to these guys who were able to, you know, freshen up and get a haircut and feel good about themselves. You know, lastly, I would share, Birga, that we have several affiliates that have a program called Homes of Hope, and it's a transitional home program in which people who are homeless can connect with a home that's provided by one of the churches that Love Inc. has a relationship with, and families can be provided the space and time to take some of the housing needs out of the equation so that they can focus on some long-term things. And those people would be involved in a program called Our Transformational Ministries, where they get classes, they get mentoring, and a church just puts the love on them. And we've seen some just tremendous relationships that develop out of that. Stories could go on, and it's great to see God's people at work doing it.
Yeah. I'm glad you pointed out the differences in some of the different states, because that really is true. Every single Love Inc. affiliate is really looking to make an impact in their community. And Albuquerque looks different than Boise, looks different than Chicago. And so depending on where the community sits in the country, they may have partnerships with different organizations. And of course, they'll have partnerships with local churches near them. And that'll shape a little bit differently what they look like and the services that they can provide, correct?
Absolutely. And so there's different needs in different communities. There's different resources. And you have different leadership within the churches or at Love Inc. that can take the ministry, the particulars of the ministry, in some different directions. The primary focus of Love Inc. is to mobilize churches to transform lives and communities in the name of Christ. We have different modes of ministry that we talk to the affiliates about. And we have different trainings. Our goal is to talk about, in the end, what we want to have happen. We'll provide some specific ways in which affiliates can get there, but it's not meant to be handcuffs. It's meant to be handrails to help them live out the Love Inc. mission uniquely in their community.
Absolutely. Kirk Vandermolen is our guest today. He is the Director of Missional Integrity for Love Inc., and you can definitely find out more online at loveinc.org. Kirk, I want to share with you a quick story, and of course with all of the listeners, about something that happened pretty recently in Albuquerque. So I know a lot of the different Love Inks accept donations of gently used furniture and household goods and things of that nature, and we had a team of volunteers that was out picking up a donation at the home of a couple who was, I guess, just downsizing a little bit, needed to get rid of some items. And as the team was there loading up furniture into our truck, there was another vehicle that drove by real slowly. And the driver of that vehicle ended up getting out, and he explained that there had been some criminal activity that had happened in the neighborhood, and he was on the lookout for whoever was responsible. And so the team welcomed him over for some conversation, and during that short interaction, he revealed that he was a veteran. He was suffering from PTSD, and then the conversation turned real quickly, and he got real honest and said he was feeling suicidal. And the volunteer team was able to pray with him and minister to him right then and there. And as God would do it, the couple that was donating the furniture, the gentleman was a retired military member, and he and his wife were then able to continue on and just pour into the life of this gentleman, who happened to be one of his neighbors whom he likely had not ever met before. And so I'm hearing these stories of just incredible things that happen both on the side of our volunteers and on the people that are being helped. And I know that you've heard dozens and dozens of stories that just speak to the hearts of both sides of the aisle, either workers or receivers.
Right, right. Absolutely. When I was an executive director and we had our mentoring program once a week, and we'd have anywhere from 25 to 35 participants, and we'd have graduations every quarter. And I always found it interesting that, and we asked the mentor and the participant to share what the program meant to them, and what their thoughts were entering the program, what it meant to them, and what their future looks like. And if you would close your eyes, Birga, and just listen to what they were saying, and you didn't know who was who, you wouldn't be able to tell who was, oftentimes you wouldn't be able to tell who was the mentor and who was the participant, because both lives are transformed. And when lives intersect at some important intersections of life, the transformation happens. And so you're exactly right. It's a beautiful thing.
That's very cool. So what does the future hold for Love Inc.? What are you hoping happens in the next couple of years for the organization nationally?
Well, we really have a desire to grow in the number of affiliates across the country, and for each individual affiliate to continue to grow in their impact in their community. Right now we have about, as you mentioned in the intro, we have around 137 affiliates. We have 22 communities across the country that are in some stage of development of becoming a Love Inc. affiliate. And if anyone listening has a desire to explore what it means, what it could mean to have Love Inc. Be born in their community, and you know, please go to our website, and we'd love to share how that process happens. But we have some dedicated staff that will. Who are in charge and very committed to helping communities start Love Inc. in a very specific process to do that. So we, there's a lot of Christian believers out there, and there's a lot of need out there, and we're in 26 states, and I think there's more than 26 states in our country, so we're ready to grow.
Indeed.
and we want to do that. And, you know, this whole notion of developmental compassion and wanting to provide a hand up, a handout. We want to help lead churches in doing that. And there's room for us to grow as an organization to do that across the country. And so we have different trainings that we invite our affiliates to come to learn how to do that in communities as well. So upwards and onwards with God's help.
So first step then to connect with the Love Inc. website, right? loveinc.org. Is there any other places that you would encourage people to visit?
Well, that's the primary location, and you can there's plenty of information to learn more about Love Inc. And if, there's a contact tab that if you're interested, in finding out maybe there's a Love Inc. in your community that you're not aware of, but we have. An information packet that we can send to you, and then beyond that, we have what we call a discernment kit or developmental kit that we can lead you through. But everything is provided there.
Okay, fantastic. Kirk, thank you so much for your time. Glad to connect with you and just glad to share with the audience about Love Inc. And again, we'll encourage everybody to check out the website, which is loveinc.org. Have a great day.
Thanks, Birga. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, it is a brand new year, and we're excited to be sharing it with you. You can visit reconnectwithcarmen.com and check out the sources that we have posted for you. You can sign up right there on the website and check out all that's going on. You can definitely reconnect with us in lots of different ways, but reconnectwithcarmen.com is going to be the main way to do that. And we can't wait to hear from you. We can't wait to share with you some of the additional programs that are available right there. We got to take a quick break, but stay with us. We'll be back with you in just a moment. ReconnectWithCarmen.com, again, is a great way to get connected with us online. Definitely want to encourage you to do that. And don't forget, we're also on Twitter, and you can use the hashtag CarmenTalk. Oh, excuse me. Forgive me for just a moment. My computer screen just zapped out. Of course, that always happens right when you want to share with somebody something, isn't it? Hey, we've got lots of great stuff coming up in the second half of the program, so don't forget to be listening in for that. We're going to be learning a whole lot more about Heather Avis, who has debuted a brand new book called The Lucky Few, Finding God's Best in the Most Unlikely Places. We're going to be hearing with her about her and her journey with special needs children. So all of that coming up on the second half of the Reconnect. Stick around, back with you in just a moment.
If you've been walking the same old road for miles and miles, if you've been hearing the same old voice at the same old lies, if you're trying to fill the same old holes inside,
go.
There's a better life.
Hey friends, I'm Birga Alden, and this is the Reconnect with Carmen LaBurge, where we're putting God in his place back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So we're talking about what people are talking about, equipping you to be an ambassador of the kingdom of God in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. We invite you to reconnect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Of course, you can like us on Facebook and let us know what you're thinking about on Twitter using the hashtag CarmenTalk. Now, Carmen is out working on her book this week, and I'm filling in for her. She'll be joining us tomorrow during the second half of the program, so be sure to listen in at that time. But joining us now is someone I'm thrilled to meet, Heather Avis. She is the wife and mother to Mason, Truly, and August. Very cool kid names. She is the author of her debut book called The Lucky Few, Finding God's Best in the Most Unlikely Places. You can find more about Heather at her website, heatheravis.com. You can also follow her and her family's adventures on Instagram at Macy Makes My Day. So, Heather, welcome to the Reconnect. Very glad to meet you.
Hi, Birga. Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to meet you as well.
I think part of the fun part about this job is, you know, the prep work and getting to know people and their writings and their websites and their, you know, social media. And I got a chance to watch some videos of you and look through some of your pictures. You do have a beautiful family, but you have a very unique family. And I'm going to let you take over and tell us all about it.
Great. Thank you so much. So my husband and I have been married for about 14 years. And about 10 years ago, we decided to start our family. And we came face-to-face with infertility, so we ended up growing our family via adoption. And 8 years ago, we brought home our eldest. She's 8 years old. Her name is Mason, and she has Down syndrome. Then we adopted our middle daughter, who is mixed race. She's African-American and Guatemalan. And our youngest is three, and he also has Down syndrome. So we have a very unique makeup of our family.
So when you began the process of looking at adoption, did you have special needs at the forefront of your mind, or were you looking for, you know, the quote-unquote traditional child to join your family?
Oh, my word, yes. So we had zero intention of adopting a child with special needs. We went the private route. We paid a lot of money for a private agency because we were very hopeful, as I think all women are, in whether they adopt or in just wanting to have a child, especially the first child. We were just super hopeful to have a healthy infant. And so who our daughter was on paper, we had said no to almost all of the things that she was on paper. And by God's good grace, she ended up being ours.
Wow. So tell us about these beautiful children and what God has taught you through your opportunity to raise them.
Yeah, I think that anyone who has children and is raising children can attest to learning something new about God every day if we just keep our ears and eyes open. Our particular children, I think the thing I've learned the most about God, and it sounds really simple, but it's just his bigness. And I grew up in the church, and I grew up knowing God is big and God is good. But to see that manifest in my children, in the fact that he's given them to me, and that his bigness and his goodness don't hinge on what our children are able to do or not do, or whether or not they share my same DNA or not, but his goodness and his bigness is found in the daily sacrifice that comes from being a parent. It's found in the hard work that comes with raising children with special needs, and found in the hard work and vulnerability that comes in having children who come from different places and who don't necessarily look the same as my husband and I. So I've learned so much about God's goodness and bigness, and continue to learn more about him with every second of every day because of these kids.
I can imagine. So obviously life now is very different than you probably thought it was going to look like back when you were in your college days.
Yeah.
How have you managed to deal with that? Maybe a dream that you once had and now this retooled, reshaped dream that God's put in your life?
Yes. I think about this often. I think about how we started trying to have kids when we were 24. So when I was in college, just a few years prior to that, I just knew I always wanted to be a mom. So the idea was that I would get married, and I was already with my husband, the love of my life, and then a few years later, we'd have kids, and then a few years after that, another kid, and we'd have our little family of four or five, and all would be well with the world. And when we were faced with infertility, it was so shocking. I think about my 22-year-old or 23-year-old self seeing a picture of what my family is today, and I think initially she would just be so terrified. Seeing two kids with Down syndrome and a child who is a different race, so was obviously adopted, that was, all those things were, I was pursuing everything outside of that. We were doing everything we could to avoid having a child with special needs, but to avoid adopting a child. And I think she would have been so scared. And I just look at my kids today, and I'm so unbelievably grateful that God's plans trump mine always. I'm so grateful that God put the bravery in my heart to say yes to our first daughter, which opened up the door to our other two children, and that the life I'm living today is a million times grander than any plan my 22-year-old self ever had. And I'm just knocked my socks off.
I love it. So if you're just now tuning in, we are talking with Heather Avis. She is an adoptive mother of three, two of which have special needs, and she's the author of a forthcoming book called The Lucky Few, Finding God's Best in the Most Unlikely Places. You can also find her blog at heatheravis.com. I'm curious about your professional journey, and I'm going to throw that into my mix of questions for just a brief moment. What did you set out to study when you were in school? And obviously now you've got into authoring and public speaking and public awareness. Did your former ambitions match anything in that category that you fill in now?
I mean, initially I would say not at all, but then thinking more about it, I went to school to be a teacher. And so I feel that where I've landed today, I still am a teacher. It's just in a different way. So I actually was a special education teacher for 5 years before staying home. So I've always had a heart that's been drawn towards people with disabilities. I've always had this incredible opportunity to get to do life with and learn from people who have disabilities and people who are different than me. But even in that, I still wanted healthy children. So it definitely, even though my heart is inclined towards the population, it was still a big shock to actually parent a child with a disability. And so once I started staying home, I didn't really think I would do anything beyond being home with the kids and all that that requires. And then I had this incredible opportunity to write this book. And so I find myself through our social media account, Macy Makes My Day on Instagram, in people's lives pretty intimately, even though it is just through squares of pictures of my life. And I get this opportunity to just share my family with others and get to share the things that they've taught me and the passions that I have for this special needs community and for adoption. So, yes, I think that having been a teacher, I will continue to teach just in a different way.
I would imagine that part of the teaching had to happen with your immediate circle, the people that you have the most influence and that you have the most influence in your life, you know, maybe your parents and extended family members. Did you have anybody that initially raised some resistance when you brought up the idea that we feel called to pursue a special needs adoption?
Yeah, I talk about this a little bit in the book, and we have a lot of friends who have chosen to adopt children with special needs at this point in their life, and we've had some friends who have come up against some really strong opposition with family. And my husband and I are very blessed that our family and immediate circle were very open to the idea. I mean, there was this initial, when we had made the announcement, it was done in, or to adopt our daughter, our oldest daughter, who has Down syndrome. It was done in this way, like, we're getting a child, because everyone was walking the adoption journey with us. So it was this, we got chosen, we're going to get a baby. But, and then that butt was so heavy and people didn't know exactly how to respond. But I feel that we were at that point in our life surrounding ourselves with people who loved us so deeply and really trusted that we were walking in God's will and trusted what God was doing. And then once she came home, there was a lot of learning alongside each other in terms of what it looks like to have a child with Down syndrome in our home and in our lives. Which really just looks like having a child, mostly.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful that there wasn't, besides this like initial heaviness, there wasn't a lot of opposition, and which can be very rare. So we're incredibly blessed for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious to hear you speak a little bit on the trends that you're seeing within the church in terms of supporting families that have special needs children, or maybe even just congregations at large dealing with the special needs community. Are you seeing positive trends? Are we kind of the same as we were 20 years ago? Any headway being made?
Yeah, it's a really great question, and one that I think I could I don't know what's happening in all churches everywhere, obviously. And I feel like I could speak to it more of the overall culture of having a child with special needs, just in society. So, and in thinking of the people who I know well who have children with Down syndrome and special needs who are also people who go to church. And I think that right now there's not a ton happening differently today than has happened 10, I'm not sure what 20 years ago looked like exactly. Unfortunately, I know a lot of people who have a child with Down syndrome who went to church for a while, and once their child reached a certain age, they just didn't have a place for their child, or they had a separate place for their child to be, which didn't really fit or meet the needs of the child or the family. Mm-hmm. I can speak for my church, and we're at a church that's just 5 years old. We're a newer church. It's grown very quickly. So we have about 2,500 people on a Sunday morning. And I think because of my husband being on staff and because of the culture of our church, people with special needs are coming because there's a place for them to just be exactly who they are. I think that society's missed that, missed creating a place for people to be just as they are. And even though the church should be very separate from society, that the church has responded that way as well, the overall church. So we're excited to have the platform we have and get to speak and share and hopefully open the eyes of church people everywhere to what might be happening in their churches, or to the lack of what could be happening in their churches in regards to loving the community of people with different abilities well and creating a space for them in their congregations.
Mm-hmm. Heather Avis is our guest. The Lucky Few, Finding God's Best in the Most Unlikely Places, is the book that she has authored. So, Heather, at your blog, do you have a search mechanism, or do you have a way for people that are looking for maybe some tangible pointers on, hey, we want to implement a special needs program in our church, or even just something as simple as, I want to teach my children how to respond respectfully and appropriately when they come across a friend on the in their school that has special needs, and just for some of those takeaway points that people really need to get educated on?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I really appreciate you asking that. So I've written quite a bit about that topic, and I do know there are some churches who have created unbelievable programs with in regards to the special needs community that are incredibly inclusive and serve them well and see the spiritual giftings that people with special needs have and help to implement those and foster those in the church. So I think that if you want to know more as far as what churches are doing that, but I think you just have to be asking around. And in terms of links and things, I can put those on my website. That's a great idea to do that. I have written a lot with parents in mind who want exactly what you said, what do we do with our kids who don't have special needs but have kids with special needs in their classroom, or see them at the park, or how do we respond to this? And I think the most important thing, and the thing that really blesses my heart as a mother who has children with Down syndrome, is when someone's intentional in reaching out to us. And I know that parents' plates are always very full, but the best way to impact your child who doesn't have special needs is to have them around people who are different than them, people who are in wheelchairs, people who talk differently, who look differently, because they're not going to ask questions or care about it until they're around it. And the truth is, being around people who are different, whether it's a disability or anything else, makes us really uncomfortable. So the more you do that, the less uncomfortable you are. So my biggest encouragement is find those families, because they're at your schools, they're in your neighborhood, they're at your churches, and find a way to connect with them, invite them to the park, and ask the questions. We're real open books in our home, and so we really appreciate when people ask us questions, even if it's like, how do I respond when I don't understand what your daughter says, or any kind of question that they might have to help them be more comfortable and help their child be more comfortable with people who have different abilities.
Yeah, really great suggestion. So I want to have you address real briefly the release date of the book and the significance of that.
Yeah, the release date is this year. It's going to be March 21st. 3/21 is World Down Syndrome Day. Down syndrome is also called Trisomy 21. And so it is the 21st chromosome. People with Down syndrome have three copies of that, thus 3/21. So we're going to be coming out on that day, coming strong, promoting Down syndrome and the lucky few. And we're really excited about it.
That's great. I love that. I think that was a really strategic release date. And I think a lot of people, well, I pray a lot of people really pick up on that and choose to get educated, choose to pick up the book, and then choose to let it really be the catalyst to just make that introduction to some special needs families around them, or even maybe even go on to have the call on their lives to adopt a special needs child.
Definitely.
So very cool stuff.
I agree with all that. Thank you so much.
All right, so the best way for people to connect with you, do you just want everybody to visit you over at heatheravis.com?
Heatheravis.com is great. If you're on social media, Macy Makes My Day, we post at least once a day just the happenings of our wild and awesome life going on over here.
I love it. That's a great description. Wild but awesome life, so very good. Hey, Heather, thank you so much. Great to meet you by phone, and we'll look forward to hearing more from you as the book releases.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a good one. All right, friends. Well, this is the point in the show where we go below the fold and lift up stories and make conversations that are designed to help you start or engage with others in conversation that may not initially appear to be about God, but where the introduction of eternal principles can change not only the conversation, but the course of another person's thinking and living. Today, Carmen is going to share about how one believer who works in the media relies on her faith to stand firm to the cultural pressures.
All right, so I'm going to read to you some excerpts from an article by Billy Hollowell, and this is in the Deseret News, and the title of the article is TV Host Reveals Why She Saved Sex Until Marriage and How She Lives Her Faith in the Spotlight. And so if you are familiar with the story of Megan Alexander from Inside Edition, if she's a person who you've kind of been following in the media for any period of time, then you already know the story that provides the framework of her new book. And so the book is entitled Faith in the Spotlight, Thriving in Your Career While Staying True to Your Beliefs. Here's what she's hoping to do. Megan Alexander is hoping to inspire young people to stay true to their faith and to their values, even while they're achieving their dreams. And she came to this conversation not because, you know, she is a person living by faith in a very public arena, all of which is true, and wanted to make a big deal over her abstinence. No, that's not how this all came to pass. In fact, she says, I never even thought I would ever talk about abstinence publicly. She says that all changed when her pastor called her one day and said that there was a magazine that was having a very hard time finding someone in the entertainment industry who supported abstinence. And so she volunteered to speak up, and she and her husband have both shared their story. And so the point of sharing their story was designed to equip and empower other people to even recognize that abstinence before marriage is still a relevant option in our culture. As Christians, we can wait. We can wait. It's not impossible. It's not an irrelevant option in the world today. She says, it worked for me, and it can work for you, too. She says that too many people don't even realize that it's something they can or even should consider. So if we're not bringing this up in conversation, if Christians are not saying in the context of private and even public conversations that abstinence is an option, and if we are not in a position to be able to say that we were abstinent until we got married and it worked for us and it can work for you too, then how is the next generation of young people gonna ever even know that that's an option? They're being overwhelmed constantly by a world that tells them that their sexuality is their identity and that the varieties of sexuality in which they might engage is wide open and ever evolving. Well, What Megan Alexander has to say about that is, look, I just made a commitment to God, and I made a commitment to my future husband that I was simply going to save that. Waiting was just one more way that I was fortifying my marriage. Now, she was fortifying her marriage before she was ever married. She was investing in her marriage by remaining abstinent before she ever met her husband. And then she talks about making this conversation even more public. So it's one thing for her to share this information in a magazine that's read by, you know, a discrete number of people. It's another thing altogether to make it so public that your own network, your own show, Inside Edition, and then the network that you're on, and other networks begin to make a big public deal over the fact that this very beautiful, very articulate, very competent professional woman who is on television, not only is she on Inside Edition, she's also on CBS's Thursday Night Football, that she is a person who remained abstinent until marriage, and she's public about it, and that it's based on her Christian faith. She said that she got a call from a pastor, or actually an email, a random email from a pastor in Seattle, basically saying, look, I have a community full of young women who aspire to be like you, and they have no role models. So will you come talk to them? And so she did, and it was a very mutually life-giving experience and encouraging. And out of it, she recognized, hey, I bet there aren't just girls like that in Seattle. I bet there are girls like that, young women like that, everywhere. And I bet that my story could be of an encouragement to them as well. So here's what she said. There just simply wasn't a book for young, ambitious women of faith who have big career desires in the secular world, in the corporate world, but who still want to figure out how she can make her family proud and hold true to her faith. She says Christians who want to change the culture must engage the culture. You need to have a seat at the table. So I'm at Inside Edition. I'm in the newsroom. And this is a person who is at the table. And she says, look, I am bringing another voice into the discussion. This is a person who I lift up to you because she is doing out there in the real world precisely what we advocate here on the Reconnect. She's literally being present for Christ in the context of every situation that she's in. And she says that it's not really that people in her industry are against religion. They're just mostly ignorant of it. It just doesn't come up.
That was Below the Fold. And, of course, Carmen is out this week doing some writing projects, but she's going to actually be calling in and talking with me tomorrow. My name is Birga. I'm helping fill in this week for the Reconnect, and I really do appreciate your time in listening in. Now, if you missed any of last week's shows, Carmen spoke with author and speaker Trillia Newbell about her new book, written to help us slow down in our busy lives and find the freedom to enjoy God and His good gifts. Also, Carmen hosted two dynamic conversations last Wednesday and Thursday about the key trends and the cultural conversations that we need to be prepared for in 2017. Then in Thursday's program, she was joined by Jim Dennison, the founder and CEO of the Dennison Forum on Truth and Culture, and Morgan Lee, a reporter at Christianity Today. They continued looking at 2017 trends to watch, this time focusing on top trends of evangelicals. This included changing evangelical perceptions on Israel, millennial evangelicals, and orthodoxy, and how Christian leaders plan to work with our incoming president, Donald Trump. Then on today's show, on Friday's show, Carmen talked about recent research which helped to understand the times and a response to them. She spoke with Greg Smith, an assistant director of research for Pew Research Center, about the religious makeup of the 115th Congress. Then she talked about LifeWay's research study, which asks, what does the public believe that can solve our nation's challenges? So you can go back and find all of that on the podcast. You can check that out at reconnectwithcarmen.com. I'll be looking at talking with her tomorrow. Lots going on right here with the Reconnect. Thank you so much for your time and attention this afternoon. God bless you. Have a great day. I'll look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.